If Seattle does raise its minimum wage to $15 an hour, it would be the biggest hike to a U.S. city's minimum wage outside of SeaTac. It's so unprecedented, Seattle can't even rely on other examples to see how it might play out here. So the city's looking to economists for answers, and so are we. David Newmark is an economist at UC Irvine in California. Hi, David.
Hello, how are you?
Thanks for being with us. Obviously, there are a lot of questions about the $15 an hour minimum wage in Seattle. What do you think are the most important things that Seattle needs to keep in mind?
Well, I think there's the standard things we worry about here, like your news story highlighted, the risk for job loss, obviously. And as you said, the research doesn't really help in predicting what might happen with a $15 an hour increase. But when you're thinking specifically about your city, one city, smaller level of government than is usually the case we consider, I think there's some other issues that arise. One is that in many cities, a lot of the workers in the city don't actually live in the city. They commute in from elsewhere, which can imply that a lot of the benefits are actually going to go to non-residents. Now, maybe the city is fine with that, maybe they're not. But that's something I think certainly residents and people who pay these costs want to know, whether the benefits are actually flowing to city residents. I think we have to realize that often lost sight of in this debate about inequality is that the minimum wage is not the only thing we do. We have a lot of government programs to support low-income families in particular, and those benefits are often tied to the earnings of those families. So what happens when earnings go up is some of those benefits decline. Now, again, we may prefer for some reason that people sort of earn it rather than get it from the government. That's a philosophical question. But the reality is, for example, if the minimum wage goes up, earned income tax credits from the federal program that flow into the city to low-income families will be reduced. So effectively, you may be taking money from city residents, business owners, and the like, and having less money coming in instead from outside the city. I also think when you think about a local minimum wage, which this would be, you have to worry about industries affected and will they choose to move, or even more likely, someone thinking about starting a business, will they be sensitive to sort of where they put the business because of this higher cost of doing business in Seattle?
Well, you mentioned both businesses and surrounding areas. We don't really have any models for this, but can we expect an outflow of some of these smaller businesses to Seattle's surrounding smaller cities, Bellevue, Renton, Kirkland in our case?
Well, this is where it's important to know what industries are affected, right? Who are the industries paying the wages that would be bumped up to the new minimum? By how much? How big are those industries? You know, some industries can't move. A downtown hotel isn't going to relocate because they're there because of all the other amenities and convention centers and, you know, various business headquarters and the like. And that's probably actually why almost every city in the country has big hotel taxes, because people are going to use the hotel anyways. Some restaurants won't move, but if you're an industry that isn't, what you sell is not so much tied to where you are, like say you're a low wage manufacturer, there's no particular reason to be in that market, and a business like that might be tempted to move, or opening another plant might decide, you know, let's put it on the other side of the border. So I think these what we call tradable industries, where what you make and where you sell it are largely unconnected, are the ones that are the most footloose potentially, the most responsive to minimum wage increases like this, tax differences, and the other kind of things economists talk about.
What else do you think Seattle needs to keep top of mind in contemplating this decision?
I think the single most important issue with respect to the minimum wage is something that people often forget or don't realize, and that's that being a low-wage worker and being in a low-income family are obviously related, but they're related very loosely. We know from the data that most of the benefits of a wage increase like this, or the smaller ones with which we have more experience nationally, most of those benefits don't go to poor families. And that's simply because, with two reasons, there's a lot of low-wage workers in non-poor families and even non-low-income families, and a lot of poor families are poor because nobody works. So really, there is an active debate about the minimum wage and does it cause job loss and doesn't it and all these kind of things. There's virtually unanimous agreement, though, that minimum wages are not a good way of targeting low-income families. Other policies do it much better. And minimum wage defenders tend to say, well, we should do this as well. And minimum wage critics tend to say, well, it's a bad way to do it, so let's do something else.
Well, we'll be watching because we'll have some kind of recommendation at the end of April. David Newmark is an economist at the University of California's Irvine campus. Thanks for being with us.
Thank you. My pleasure.
With Steve Scherer, I'm Marcy Silman, and you're tuned to The Record from KUOW.